In an ideal world, what sorrows would be no more? I just take a few moments. I'm going to, if you'll call something out, I will repeat it back for the congregation. Just what sorrows did you name? Diseases, negative thinking, Jane said, never bearing a child, homelessness, hatred, selfishness, not feeling loved, war, thinking each illness is the end, people's inhumanity to people, hunger, economic injustice, homelessness, war, abuse to the innocent, poverty, trying to stay positive when you're not feeling positive, faking it till you might perceive that you're being making it, right? Yeah. All of these things call to mind. Yes, John, one more. You guys are just wanting to get to the hope. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Yes, Don. The death of children. Yeah. A dying planet. Yeah. Death of children, a dying planet. Death of children, a dying planet. It's not hard to come up with things. It's not hard for them to roll off our tongues. It's not hard to see them in the news. It's not hard to experience them for ourselves in our lives with disease and early death and uncertainty and fear. And yet we have this vision for us from Isaiah, kind of speaking, for those who weren't here last week, we heard from the prophet Haggai, who the folks had been back from exile, and they were starting to build community back again, and they'd gotten started, but they hadn't finished. They'd gotten busy doing their personal building of their homes and things, and yet the spiritual locus of community, the temple, had yet not been finished. Isaiah is working alongside that time, probably a little bit prior to that prophet, and truly trying to help a people that is coming out of calamity for whom all of these things that you name are deeply embedded in a part of what they have come out of and are trying to navigate in the time ahead. They come with a deep sense of longing to understand who they are as a people, and what it does mean when you put one brick on top of the other and have a temple place where it was believed in that time that as you build that, that God is residing there, and then God's blessing is emanating out from there. We talked about our own barn and how we come here and we gather and we find friendships and we find this connection and we get together and hear from one another. And it is from that energy that we start to really believe in a vision that extends beyond ourselves, and how desperately the Israelites needed to have a sense of belonging and a sense of forward motion and belief that God was still with them and that God was continuing to act in some powerful and radical ways. Do you hear these visions as you've read them, if you've talked them out, what it was like when, what, one in four children probably around that time made it to adulthood, right? When the act of childbirth, it wasn't until much more recent modern technology, and still some places in this world, childbirth is not a safe encounter, right, for women, for babies that are seeking desperately to come into this world after having been formed in their mother's womb, God's presence in that, and yet the statistics can be alarming even unto our day. Isaiah and the people, they say, if we're going to shoot a vision forward, let's go to the nth degree, right? I heard a lot of talk about being positive. This isn't a half glass full or empty. This is a full glass of tall, drinkable water that can meet us in this place of the most desperate thirst to believe there is something worth investing in again. As they reach the time of a new epic, a pivotal moment in their history, how is God going to take them into the next season? Does it have anything to do with us? Does it have anything to do with the fact that we could look around and be ongoingly weighed down and burdened by the sorrows that we could name? Does it have anything to do with the fact that we cannot deny them, just as Isaiah's people could not deny them and not address them, not to tend to the broken, not to help a woman through labor? All these things would continually be happening, and yet can you hold a vision next to it that says all the things in life that are going to force us in that place of sorrow? Where is our choice as our identity would shift to then cast that vision of hopefulness that lives alongside the pain and the sorrow? It is a shift in the identity of an institution. The institution here being the temple, or the place in which people would reside structurally together. It can't be the same as it was. We talked about that last week. where it was beautiful, and it existed for year upon year. And now when they're back on the other side of great sorrow, it's going to look differently. And it's going to be deepened and enriched in some powerful ways. And why not? Full glass of water, put it all out there, and imagine a lion lying down with a lamb. Even unto our day, African Americans have 2.3 times the infant mortality rate of non-white Hispanics. And African American infants are 3.8 times as likely to die from complications related to low birth weight. There are a slew of statistics we could begin to name. In our current day and age, we ask, what is our responsibility? If we're casting vision, how do we then still do the work and activity of the justice and the economic injustice and all of the things that we named? How do we hold our two hats? How do we hold our head and our hearts? How do we remember the calamity of which we've come, being so grateful for that, and still face the sorrows that are there with the push of the remote or the swipe of the finger? I think it's that we continue to look for signs of radical hope breaking through shifting institutional mindsets that otherwise feel very structurally embedded, that could stunt a people not putting together the temple again, thinking, well, God might make something out of this rubble, when they say, no, God is asking us, Haggai says, to come in and to pick up the pieces of rubble and to put them into place again in a way that will be different, in a way that will be good, in a way that will serve the people and the surrounding community who are ongoingly facing these questions and the disease and the uncertainty that lies out there in the future, which we don't yet know. I saw evidence of radical thinking when I happened to see an article, maybe you saw it too, this past week, about the Baltimore Museum of Art. Did you see this? That they're going to only acquire for this whole next year, they are only going to acquire works from women artists. And there was a lot in terms of the person who was orchestrating this change saying, you have to do something radical. And I think the convenience of that historical opening, sometimes the commemorations and the anniversaries experience are a particular opening for a broader thinking and a radical mindset. We studied that earlier in our Jubilee season, radical meaning rootedness, right? Going back to the original rootedness of God, that would be something like Isaiah's vision, something coming out of Eden, something in the original Imago Dei of God. And the Baltimore Museum is saying that in this year coming up, as we think about what it was like for the ratification of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing U.S. women the right to vote, we could just acquire one painting and put it up next to a Mark Rothko and applaud ourselves, right? And say, we did it. But they said a little bit more. Every artwork that the museum obtains for permanent collection in the next year, whether through purchase or donation, will have been created by a woman. Now, what if someone came by and said, I've got a great Gustav Klimt for you, and they say, sorry, we're not taking any new acquisitions and donations this year. Pointing to a little bit of the sacrifice that is required, the cost of some of that accountability, the cost of some of that radical vision means sometimes saying no to the thing that otherwise may have brought you life and that may look rather strange to the outside eye. Not everybody is happy about this, right? But this is what he said, that each of the 22 exhibits, Christopher Bedford, director of museum, says, on view will have female-centric focus, and 19 will showcase works exclusively by women, and one will include works by at least one transgender woman, Zachary Drucker. He further says, this is how you raise awareness and shift the identity of an institution. You don't just, as I said, purchase one painting and put it up. You're seeking to rectify centuries of imbalance. You have to do something radical. We recognize the blind spots we have had in the past, and we are taking the initiative to do something about them. This is a declaration of intent, he further says, because it's sometimes a flashpan thing where you say, we're going to adopt this for a year, and then we're going to move on. But he wants it to set a precedent. the kinds of exhibits we will have and the acquisitions we will make. There can be no beginning and no end, just a consistency of effort in the right direction. All the paintings by women artists, those voices that haven't been heard or haven't had as much opportunity, contribute to the public witness and the public history of a people. All those things we brought to the Isaiah passage, we also acknowledge that some people have it better than others. Some people, that would have been true even in the exile, and as they come back, they have a chance to create society anew in all of its economic devastation and all of the potential uncertainty, that they and their building blocks have the chance to live Jubilee, to again shift identity in favor that each and every person would have an opportunity to live their lives to the fullest. Did you hear that? That each old person would live to the really old age, although I'm not sure we all want to make it to 100. And did you hear this about women? The most vulnerable thing that they could really do in that time was bear a child. And here in this vision of Isaiah, it is the woman who's uplifted and who would be safe and whose role would be honored in this place and time and space. There are voices, friends, that we continue to not hear as a result of our structural and institutional identities that exist beyond these walls and probably carry over into our own structural identity and witness. The question as we go forward, continuing to ask about new wineskins as we have in retreat, and continue to try to hear the prophet's voice speaking to us with depth and fervency, is to say half a glass of water is okay. But here in this Jubilee opening, as we cast out into 50 years to come, where are the radical natures in which voices aren't being heard, in which we can truly see each other in the midst of the pain and the suffering, and hold that in tension with the choice that we do have for some positive places of ongoing change and partnership in our world? This is the call of the church, friends, to address the wounds of the hurting, and also to hold the vision for this sense of return. A return into which the ways of the radical thinking, which all are honored, sometimes it requires really out-of-the-box thinking. Looking at an institution like a museum, you've got to cater to the donors, right? What are the things you have to think about? You have to get people to show up to the museum. And how do you cultivate across new generations of people a love of coming to see what artists have to say? Not just male artists, but gender fluid artists and female artists and artists of color and artists from other places in the world. We need each other in that. And while we're no museum, we do seek to bring people together. And in some ways, although this is not a performance that we share each week, we are in the live act of worship, the public work of the people. And in such display, our question is how we tap into that radical nature that leaves others on the outside scratching their heads and saying, what kind of weirdness are they up to next? As we turn to our pod sharing, how in this moment you might reconnect with your friends, emerging from that place as you've named your sorrows, now into our second question. And if you're a visitor, I distinctly am aware that this question might be a bit difficult for you, as we name KC particularly. But feel free to talk about your spiritual community, whatever that looks like for you, whether nearby or far, and share that with the people that you're gathered with. As God creates a new heaven and earth through KC, what part are we called to play?